Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, Larry Mueller here, and back with us on Garden Talk today is Brian Huddleston, director of the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic. He's in the Department of Plant Pathology at UW-Madison. We call him Dr. Death, but tell you what, he knows a lot about plant diseases. And I hope you'll join in, and I guess we're going to start by talking about preventing plant disease and take your questions on that, but others as well. Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234, or you could send an email to ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Brian Huddleston, welcome back. Good to have you with us again.
Yeah, thank you, Larry. Glad to be here.
You know, for some parts of the state, many parts of the state, it's been a dry year. What does that mean for plant disease?
That makes me very disappointed because I like plant diseases. And when it's dry like this, there aren't a lot of them, or certainly the diseases aren't as severe. So I don't tend to see as many samples coming into my clinic during periods where it's really hot and dry.
And, of course, we can't depend on weather to cooperate every year. What other elements do diseases need to be successful in the garden?
Well, the big one really is really that rain or water for most plant diseases. A lot of the organisms that cause disease are fungal in nature, and the fungi tend to be more active when it's a little bit on the wetter side. Where we do tend to see a fair number of diseases every year in Wisconsin, even during drier periods, are the powdery mildews, because they really don't like a ton of rain. They prefer dry conditions, but a lot of muggy weather. So when we get into a typical Wisconsin summer where there's not a lot of rain, but it's really humid, then we tend to see a lot of powdery mildews. But a lot of the other foliar diseases that we see on trees and shrubs and herbaceous plants and in our vegetable gardens, they have not been super active right now because, again, we haven't been getting consistent rains. Now, in some areas, we've had downpours, so I do expect to see some activity based on those rain events. But in general, it's been pretty dry and not the best year for my perspective for diseases.
So how important is plant selection when trying to be preventive?
It can be very important depending upon the particular problem that you're dealing with and the particular plant that you're growing. With certain diseases like some of the powdery mildews, we tend to see a lot of those on plants like phlox and monardas, and there's been a lot of breeding for resistance to powdery mildews on those particular plants. So for a lot of casual home gardeners, if they decide they want to grow a phlox or a monarda in their garden, I'll oftentimes recommend that they look around for a variety that's been bred for resistance. And those are usually advertised quite heavily because there's been a lot of time and effort put into developing those varieties. Other things, I have been dealing here recently with a lot of verticillium wilt. That's a fungal disease. It's a soil-borne fungus that invades plants through the roots and colonizes the water conducting tissue and causes trees. It blocks off water movement inside the tree, and that causes a lot of wilting and dieback and ultimately death of woody trees and shrubs and herbaceous plants as well. So I've had samples of that come in on magnolia and yellowwood and catalpa, all really good hosts. Of the Japanese and Korean maple are also very good hosts for that as well. And whenever I diagnose that particular problem, it's a relatively limited number of replacement plants that you can come and put into that area. So I have a fact sheet on verticillium wilt on trees and shrubs, and there's a very short list. Usually the replacement that I recommend are conifers, so evergreens, because they tend not to be susceptible to that disease. If you're dealing with that disease in vegetable crops like tomato, again, there's been a lot of breeding for resistance in tomatoes. So if you've had verticillium wilt in your garden and it's been diagnosed, you really do need a formal diagnosis for this. Then I'll recommend, you know, moving your tomato production maybe to another part of your garden, or if you really have to plant tomatoes in that area where there's a problem, there are resistant varieties. So whenever you're selecting tomato varieties, if you look after the variety name for a letter V, that means that variety has been bred for resistance to verticillium.
I had a question from a neighbor, actually, who has some tomato plants. As long as you're mentioning tomato, I thought I'd bring it up.
He
has uh, a, a large pot, and I don't know if it was Big Boy or Better Boy tomatoes, so the larger tomatoes, mm-hmm. and he's seeing the leaves yellowing, the bottom leaves yellowing, mm-hmm. and going, and he asked me if it was a disease, and it may not be, or would it be?
Is he seeing any spotting associated with the yellowing on the leaves, or are they just turning yellow?
He didn't mention spotting.
Okay, I would definitely go back and look for that. If it's just uniform yellowing on the leaves, that could be a fertility issue of some kind, something like a nitrogen deficiency. Nitrogen tends to be pretty mobile in plants, so if the plants are short on nitrogen, they will take nitrogen out of the older leaves and then move it up towards the more vigorously growing tissue. If there are spots, I would look for, in our neck of the woods here in the Madison area, I would look for small spots, not more than about maybe a quarter of an inch in diameter, somewhat bleached in the center with a darkened outer ring. And if you can see any of those on the leaves, then it could be a leaf disease. It's quite common on tomatoes called septorial leaf spot. And that'll start on the older leaves at the bottom because there tends to be denser foliage. And so that traps moisture air. And then once that disease gets established in the plant, it'll kind of move its way up the canopy and cause a lot of leaf death. Saving grace for that disease, typically the pathogen does not infect the fruits. So you can get some edible, reasonable fruits off the plants, but usually a reduction in number and size. Up a little farther north in the state, if you're getting up into the Stevens Point area, there's a similar disease called early blight. And that will do the same thing, except it's a different fungus and slightly larger spots on the leaves. The reason you see more of that up in that area is because there's a lot of commercial potato production in the Stevens Point area, and that particular fungus not only infects tomatoes but also potatoes.
Let's take some calls. Tim in Roxbury has a question for you. Let's go there. Tim, hi. Thank you for calling.
Oh, hi, Larry and Brian. Thank you very much for taking my call. I have a question actually about we have a Harry Lauder's walking stick. I thought it was a filbert, but it's a Harry Lauder's walking stick, red majestic.
It is a filbert.
What's happening, we've had it for many years in our front yard, in our bed, but this year we're noticing a lot of dieback on the branches. There's no leaves showing up, and we're seeing a lot of suckers come up from the base right now from the tree. Okay. We're just not sure what's going on.
Yeah, one of the things I would look for on Harry Lauder's walking stick, that's a type of hazelnut or filbert, check those dead branches and look to see whether you can see. They almost look like little oval footprints, like something's walked across the branch. They'll be dark and black, probably maybe a quarter to a half an inch long and maybe a quarter an inch in width. But it'll look like somebody left little tiny oval footprints on the branches. And there's a fungal disease called Eastern filbert blight. And that particular fungus that causes that disease will produce little fruiting bodies in this kind of footprint sort of pattern. And unfortunately, if you're dealing with that, that tends to be a lethal disease on Harry Lauder's walking stick. You can try pruning back, but I would be very aggressive with the pruning. If you see those little dark structures in the dead branches, you need to prune back probably at least 12 inches below where you see those. And sometimes you're way back into the main trunk by the time you do that. If you don't prune out the dead branches and the fungus is there, it will continue and eventually kill the tree. If you don't see those little black areas, the other thing I worry about, we do see issues with our winter last year where we didn't have a ton of snow cover. It was a little bit kind of warm and then cold. So periods of where it was kind of cycling through temperatures. And that can be really tough on trees and shrubs. It can cause physical injury to branches, and that will lead to them dying back and then not leafing out in the spring. So that's another possibility as well. If you don't see those little footprints, then again, you could certainly prune out those dead branches. You wouldn't have to be quite as aggressive with the pruning, maybe down 4 to 6 inches below where you see the dead tips of the branches, and then see if you get additional grow back. But again, if we have a really funky winter where it doesn't really get cold and stay that way, we have variable temperatures, you really run the risk of a lot of just winter injury or dieback over the winter.
Tim, there you go. Thank you so much. Good luck. Appreciate your call. Arnie in Plainfield, your turn. Hi, Arnie.
Hi. I've got a couple questions for Brian. I have a good established orchard that's about 120 fruit trees, 90% of which are apples. And this is the first year I've had anything to this extent. And I pretty much from pictures on the UW Extension and so forth, diagnosed this as cedar apple rust.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the trees are, seem to be immune to it, and others have quite a bit of it this year. Mm-hmm. And with my options, I try to do things as organically as possible. I'm not certified. But what can I do to stop at any time for this year or for next year?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Are you seeing really bright yellow spots on the leaves?
Yes.
Yes. Most likely cedar apple rust. That's an interesting fungus that causes that disease. It alternates. It has to infect two different hosts to complete its life cycle. So one of the hosts tends to be things like apples and crab apples. And then the other host are junipers, particularly red cedar. So what I would suggest you do is scout around your orchard and look for any red cedars, any other types of junipers, and get rid of those. If you can get rid of that other host plant, that'll take care of the problem on your apple trees, because it's spores coming off of that juniper that are infecting your apples. The spores produced on the apple leaves reinfect the junipers. So the easiest and best way that you can manage this disease is basically separate the two hosts by a long distance, as far apart as possible. So I would rogue out any junipers that you can find. Are you seeing any evidence of any sort of spots on the fruits themselves, or is it just on the leaves?
Yeah, two of them, I think they're on the apples too, because I'm getting the little bumps in the bottom of the apple starting to turn, and it's,
Yeah, because you're a commercial producer, what I'm going to have you do, I'm going to give out my email here, and I'm going to have you email me, and then I'm going to refer you. We have a commercial fruit pathologist in our department who's a UW Extension colleague, and she can help you out as a commercial grower to provide you with chemical recommendations that might be available for that. And so just give me a shout at P as in Paul, D as in David again, C as in Charles, at wisc.edu. And I don't want to give Leslie's email out over the air because she might not appreciate that, but I'm happy to give it out personally, particularly to commercial growers. Leslie was actually on your show not too long ago.
Yes, she was.
And answers questions. And she's really great, but she works with larger scale fruit producers. And you know, some of the things that I recommend for home growers, there are other alternatives for commercial growers that will work better in terms of fungicides. But again, the best thing to do, if you can, is find those junipers and get rid of them. Because if you can get rid of the junipers, that'll take care of the disease. And then you won't have to use chemical control at all.
And again, that email was pddc at wisc.edu.
That's correct.
Got it. Arnie, good luck. Appreciate the call. Brian Huddleston, our guest today, director of the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic at UW-Madison. Tyler Ditter's our engineer. Jill Nadeau, our producer. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Taking a look at plant diseases on the show today with our guest, Brian Huddleston, director of the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic. I'm Larry Mueller. Thanks for joining in today. By the way, we have a survey going on, and I hope you'll join in. You can just, and in the information in the survey is we sort of ask what you've learned during the show, but also ask for program ideas. It'll just take you a couple minutes to fill out. You can go to go.wisc.edu/radio, or probably easier, just go to wpr.org/Larry and click the link on the program note. So wpr.org/Larry, click on the link on the program note. There you go. Let's go to Christy in Chippewa Falls. Hi, Christy.
Hi, Larry and Brian. So a few of the balsam on my wooded property recently acquired, sand, very dry. A few of the balsam have a white sort of a powder on some of the needles. And then unrelated might be one or two have a kind of a funky gnarled growth where there's a bunch of tips that are just really concentrated. So because it's been so dry, I've been slower watering, so maybe I shouldn't do that because maybe it's fungus. So what is it? How do I not promote it?
Sure.
Yeah. So are you seeing any browning on your balsams, or are they pretty green?
I'm looking at them right now, and they are amazingly healthy.
Okay. Okay. The white, I don't think, is probably a disease. We talked about powdery mildews before, and interestingly, the group of plants where I don't see powdery mildews at all are evergreens like balsam fir. So that group of fungi don't seem to go to things like firs and pines and spruce trees. Sometimes if you get some type of mite feeding, that can cause some lightening and whitening of the needles. So you might actually be dealing with sort of an insecty sort of issue rather than a disease issue with that. It's hard, a little hard to tell from your description. This might be a situation where you might want to send in some photographs, and you could certainly send them to me. I do charge for that, unfortunately, anymore, just to make up revenue to support my clinic. It's a $20 fee to do a digital diagnosis, but I'm happy to look at photos for you. The other thing you talked about, Larry and I can see one another, and I just smiled real big when you started to describe that, because I think it's probably one of my favorite diseases. We just talked about cedar apple rust, and if it's the disease I'm thinking of, it's what's called broom rust. So it's a related fungus, and when this particular rust fungus infects things like fir trees, it causes a broom, so a cluster of branches, and oftentimes the needles will be a little stubby and a little bit distorted, and if you catch it at the right time of the year, all of a sudden those needles will get really kind of powdery. And maybe this is the white that you're seeing. It could be the sporulation from that broom rust, because they're kind of a creamy color and they can fall down. It is another alternating rust where you need to have another host to complete the life cycle. Unfortunately, the alternate rust for the broom rust on firs are chickweeds, which are these little tiny weedy plants that have little white flowers, and they tend to be pretty common. So my idea about eliminating the other host to control the disease doesn't work particularly well with broom rust on firs. What you can do, though, is simply prune out those broomed branches, those clusters of branches. That'll make the trees look a little bit better. And if you prune those out early enough before they produce spores, then you can prevent infection of the chickweeds, which will then break this disease cycle again. But that's kind of an unusual disease. I don't see that very often. I actually did have someone, though, who sent in a sample of that to the clinic this spring, and I was over the moon because I'm helping teach a summer class, and I got to show my students that disease. But again, if you can rub that white off the needles and it happens to be kind of below where you have one of those clusters of branches, then I think maybe that's what you're dealing with, is just some of the sporulation from that broom rust.
There you go, Christy. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Margie in Mount Horeb, on to you now. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I have a question about an oak leaf hydrangea. Ruby slippers is the variety. And the branches on the ruby slippers, it's 2 years old. This is the second year. And it grew to be about 3 feet tall and 3 feet wide. And a couple of weeks ago, the branches, all the leaves on them began to just fold in and dry out, not dry out, just all folded in. They looked awful. So I cut off a couple of them, thinking, well, I've caught the insect or whatever. I sprayed insecticide all the way around it, and I've got another branch that's going now. What should I do with it? What is it? What should I do with it? Should I dig it up? Should I help?
So the folding on the leaves is on individual branches. It's not across the entire shrub?
That's correct.
Okay. And they look kind of droopy as well?
Oh, yes. Yes,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. My first thought when I hear of kind of individual branches kind of dying back and wilting like that is this verticillium wilt disease that I talked about early in the show. that would require testing to see whether that's what's going on. The other possibilities could be a root rot problem that's somewhat localized in the root system of the plant feeding into those branches. I sometimes can see that on hydrangeas. Again, that would require some testing. So if you're interested in contacting me after the show, and we can talk about a possible sample submission to test for those. If you're dealing with verticillium wilt, that's very unfortunate because, as I mentioned, that tends to be a lethal disease. Ultimately, you'd have to put in something else in that area that's not susceptible to that disease. But if it's a root rot, there are potentially some chemical options for that. If you'd have to actually contract with someone, though, to make those fungicide applications. But there are a few more treatment options if it would be a root rot or something of that sort. The other thing we would probably check on as well would be to see if there are any boring insects that are in those branches, because it could be it's an insect issue rather than a disease issue. So what you might want to do is kind of cut those branches all the way back to the ground and split them open and see if you see anything inside the branches that's crawling around. So that would be something you could do on your own. And if you see something, again, shoot me an email. And if you can take some photos, then I can forward that on to PJ Leash, who's our insect diagnostician, and he can give you a shout and let you know what insect you're dealing with.
And thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. As long as we're talking about hydrangeas, there was a photo sent from Cindy of her hydrangea plant. She says for the last 8 years or so, she's had this brownish rust on the blooms, eventually affecting the whole bloom. Also, the items, the stems have rust on them. Wondering what could cause them. And it's just for those who are listening, I look at the picture and I thought, this looks like a hand-formed meatball with Parmesan cheese bits on it. So you can picture that. What do you think, Brian?
Yeah, with a little brown here or there. So
yeah.
What I think you're dealing with on the flowers is something called botrytis blight. It's a fungal disease. The particular fungus involved can infect a wide range of different types of plants, but it's kind of a wimpy pathogen. It typically does not infect leaves or branches, but it really kind of prefers or is more able to infect flowers. So we see a lot of it on roses. If you've ever had roses that are in the bud stage and then all of a sudden those flowers just totally dry up and turn brown, that's usually due to botrytis blight. We'll see this on dahlias, and peonies are another plant that have a lot of problems. So, and we do see it on hydrangeas as well. It tends to be a relatively cosmetic disease in the scheme of things. It usually doesn't kill a plant, but it can unfortunately make those blooms unattractive. The big thing management-wise, sometimes it's very difficult to get away from this disease because it can be environmentally determined. So if you got rain at the wrong time, right as those flowers were beginning to bloom, that would be a perfect opportunity for this fungus to get established. In a drier season, when you don't have rain around flowering, then you probably won't see any issues. But the big thing that I would suggest would be thinning the plant a little bit to get better airflow. That means, again, that if things get wet, you get better air penetration, and that dries things more quickly. And that's a less favorable environment for this and a lot of other fungi to get established. In terms of what you're seeing on the stems, it still could be botrytis, but my guess is you're probably not seeing, as we progress into the season, any dieback on those branches. I may be wrong, but that would be my guess. And if so, it could again be this botrytis, but again, that fungus doesn't cause real serious problems on branches or leaves. You may get a little bit of discoloration, but in the long term, it's not a real big problem. Good fall cleanup, definitely do that. So get rid of any of the leaf litter, any of those flowers off of the shrubs. Unfortunately, that won't totally take care of the problem because this particular fungus tends to be pretty common out in the environment. So it's hanging around pretty much everywhere. So there's a ready source of spores. But those are my thoughts at this point.
Thank you very much for that email and that photo. Kay in Sauk Prairie, on to you. Hi, Kay.
Hi there. Well, my problem is with wine nine bark, and it's probably common. I'm sure you know right away what it is. It's that gray-white covering of, like, side twigs. And the interesting thing is it doesn't brush off at all. It just makes that twig almost like it's petrified. It's really hard. The leaves are and everything. And is there any kind of control? Some of the plantings are out in the open where there's good airflow. A couple are near other shrubs, and the condition seems the same.
Yeah. That what you said nine bark, and then you mentioned like Brandywine or the notorious one for me for this disease is Diablo nine bark. It's a powdery mildew. And quite frankly, normally I don't worry about powdery mildews on woody trees and shrubs. The only time I see really serious damage from powdery mildews is on nine bark, and the red foliaged varieties in particular can have problems exactly like you've described. The big thing for control comes down to a certain extent how much it bothers you. My typical recommendation is just to go in and prune out those dead branch tips. So prune down about 4 inches below where you see the disease, where the branches have kind of petrified, and then maybe thin the trees a little bit to get better airflow. That may help reduce the severity of the disease. You may not be able to totally get rid of it. Oftentimes when people talk to me about planting a nine bark, I will steer them away from the red foliage varieties and suggest some of the green foliage varieties. People don't like to hear that because they really like the red foliage, but you do run the risk of seeing this disease with things like Diablo and I think it's Brandywine is one of the varieties. It's not going to really kill the tree. It will cause some tip dieback. That's the worst effect you'll see, but you can get control on that through pruning and then good fall cleanup. So definitely get in there and make sure you pick up any of the leaves that are left over from that tree that have come off in the fall and get those out of your yard. Well, certainly if you could take them to a local recycling, organic matter recycling place if you want to. If you have the option to burn those, not very environmentally friendly, but it's a good way to get rid of disease-causing organisms. You can also bury the material, cover it with soil. Or if you're a real good hot composter, you can compost that leaf litter. I would not compost the branches that you prune off. That's a little tougher to break those down. But with the leaves, you can hot compost them as long as you're hot composting. And otherwise, I would say just try to, if it's not super severe, just try to live with it. Because with a red foliage variety, you're probably going to see some level of that disease every year.
There you go, Kay. Thank you very much for calling. On to Kel in Sugar Camp. Hi, Kel.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call. We've been talking about Verticillium wilt, and I was just wanted to remind people that the tomatoes champion and celebrity are VFNTs, and they're really very reliable, and they're good producers, a nice medium tomato, and they're fairly carefree. And I just wanted to remind people that they should look for those. Most nurseries seem to carry them. But they do all four, you know, Fusarium, nematodes. I don't know what the T is for, but and Verticillium.
And name those again for us, Kel, the names of the tomato varieties?
Celebrity and Champion.
Okay. Yep. What does the T stand
definitely.
For, Brian?
The N is for nematodes. I'm trying to think what the T is for. I don't know that I've necessarily I'd have to look that one up. The V's and V is for Verticillium. The F's are for Fusarium wilt, which is a very similar disease. It's another fungal pathogen that colonizes the water conducting tissue and blocks it off. And that one's an interesting fungus because there are several variants of that particular fungus that go to tomatoes. So more F's mean that it's resistant to more of the variants. Now, sometimes you have to be a little bit cautious about using varieties that are really loaded up with a lot of resistance genes, because if you don't have the pathogen that it's resistant to, it takes up energy of the plant to be resistant to a disease. And so that can sometimes, if the plant is spending a lot of energy to try to fend off a pathogen that you don't have, that can take away from fruit size and number of fruits. So I oftentimes recommend kind of tailoring the variety that you are going to select to the particular disease problems that you're seeing. So if you have a history of Verticillium, definitely use a Verticillium wilt resistant variety. Other things, unfortunately, that you won't find a lot of resistance to are the common leaf blights that we talked about. So the Septoria and the early blight, although there are some varieties that are out there that are resistant to those. Unfortunately, oftentimes people don't care for the flavor of the fruits on those varieties. So that can be a trade-off as well. You get resistance, but you don't necessarily have other horticultural characteristics like flavor that are what you want. So that is a trade-off when you're using resistant varieties.
Cal, thanks again. Appreciate the call. Mia in Madison, on to you now. Hi, thank you for calling. Mia there? We lost Mia. We'll put Mia on hold here and go to Jason in Shawano. Hi, Jason.
Yeah, I'm here.
Go ahead.
I have a 30 by 90 foot hoop house, but I'm having a couple issues. One issue is cucumbers with like about the size of a dime brown spots, and I have about 50 pepper plants, but two are just wilting. It's like they were doing great, all of a sudden nice and green, but all of a sudden they look wilted, like no water or something. I was wondering if that's an issue to look at.
Yeah, the spots that you're seeing on the cucurbits, there are actually several different things. Are these on the leaves or on the fruits?
Yeah.
On the leaves,
on
yeah.
The leaves.
There are several different fungal diseases and actually some bacterial diseases that might cause that particular problem. How severe is it? Is it a lot of spotting or just a few spots here or there?
A lot of spots. I'm just wondering if that's something I got to be concerned about.
Yeah, it would be nice to know exactly which disease that is before making any sort of recommendation. The general recommendation, though, for leaf diseases on cucurbits, it's kind of late right now to do anything to get it under control, but you can plan ahead for next year. So really, really good cleanup of any of the debris from those plants and get that out of your hoop house. And this is material, again, that you can burn, bury, or hot compost. Most of the leaf pathogens, if it's a really kind of tender leaf like you would have on a cucumber or other type of vine crop, those will compost quite well. And then the possibility would be there might be some possibility if you think it's really necessary for some sort of chemical treatment next year. But again, I would prefer to base that on exactly what disease is there. And that would entail submitting a sample if you're so inclined. In terms of the pepper plant, do you have any walnuts near your hoop house?
No.
Okay. That I always have to ask that first, because a lot of times when you see wilting of plants like tomatoes or peppers or eggplants, if you happen to have a walnut tree near your garden or wherever you're growing the plants, it can be the walnut trees that are causing the problem. They produce chemicals called juglones that are actually designed to kill off other types of plants to reduce competition. But if you don't have any walnuts anywhere remotely close to your hoop house, then the other possibilities are this verticillium wilt that I mentioned. And then that would be the first one that I would probably test for. But again, that would require a lab test. There are some other possibilities. There's also a Phytophthora. It's a root rotter, but it'll move up the stems and cause discoloration, and that'll cause the stems to collapse and then the plants will wilt. But all of those, again, require a lab diagnosis to really figure them out.
Yeah. And by far away, you mean well beyond the drip line of any of those trees.
Yeah. Keep in mind that with a tree, typically the root system will go out 3 to 5 times the height of the tree away from the trunk. So you can have walnuts that you don't think are very close to your garden, but the roots are growing under your garden. Now, the farther you get from the trunk, the more spread out they're going to be, and you're less likely to see issues. But if you happen to plot a sensitive plant right on top of where there's a walnut root, then eventually as the plant grows, the tomato or pepper root will get close to the walnut root, and then you'll start to see issues with those toxins.
Jason, thanks again. Appreciate it. Let's go back to Mia in Madison. Mia, are you there? No, she's not. Must have lost her. Let's go to Elizabeth in Columbia County.
Yes, good morning. I just wanted to weigh in on the early and late blight on tomatoes and potatoes.
Yeah.
And I grow tomatoes. I don't grow potatoes, but it's taken me years. But the last couple of years, I've been pretty successful with using a liquid copper fungicide, low concentration, and pruning out lower branches that aren't fruiting spurs, and which I'd done all along. But the copper fungicide seems to be a real game changer in my situation.
Yeah, and that's something I usually try to tell people, at least initially, to try to control those leaf blights culturally. So in terms of plant spacing, so spacing your plants as far apart, doing what you've done, which is to kind of thin the plants a little bit, prune off some of the lower branches to get better airflow. That'll make the environment drier, which is less conducive for disease. As I mentioned, you can buy resistant varieties, but they may not have the flavor that you want. The other thing that I do recommend for those leaf blights is mulching underneath the plants. And also, wherever you've had tomatoes last year, maybe even the year before, I would go and mulch over that area as well. You can get little bits of the old plant debris that are harboring these fungi that'll filter into the soil, but they'll continue to generate spores that can get into the air and then moved around. So you want that mulch as a physical barrier to prevent those spores from getting into the air. And then kind of as a last resort, I will recommend fungicide treatments. And certainly one of the ones that I have recommended in the past, particularly if people want to kind of grow more on the organic side, would be the copper containing fungicides. Those can work quite well for these leaf blights, both the common leaf blights, the ones I've talked about, which are early blight and Septoria leaf spot. And then you mentioned late blight, which is a much more serious disease. The coppers will help prevent those as well, that disease as well.
Yeah. Thanks, Elizabeth. Appreciate it. Mike in Coon Valley, your turn. Hi, Mike.
Yes, I'm just kind of curious what could be affecting cherry trees in our woods. I'm seeing a lot of mature cherry trees that have a lot of dead branches on top. I've got probably a 30-foot smaller diameter one that looks almost completely dead. It had one sprout in the middle where it's trying to save itself. But what's out there that could be affecting the cherry trees in the woods?
One of the things that I would look for, I don't see a lot of woodland cherries, but if we talk about fruiting cherries or ornamental cherries that I see in landscape settings, and the pathogens tend to be the same. One of the things I would look for on those trees that are dying would be any indication of blobs of sap on the dead branches. If you see that, there's a disease called bacterial canker, and that infects the branches. Oftentimes it can get in through wounds. And interestingly, one of the bacteria that can cause that is what's called an ice nucleating organism. So if you get high populations of this bacterium growing on a plant, and it oftentimes grows on plants without causing disease, but if you get high populations, it can actually increase the risk of cold injury or frost damage. And so if it induces the frost damage, that can provide an entry point for the bacterium into the branches where it actually becomes a true pathogen and causes additional dieback. So that could be one thing. In cherries, I do see a lot of root rots as well, although it's been kind of dry for me to worry a lot about root rots. But if you're in an area that's had excessive rains over a period of time, it could be that the cherries have problems in the root system that are causing water uptake issues, and that will cause branch dieback. The other thing I would check would be in the vicinity of those cherries, whether or not you are seeing other trees that are dying. If you are, then I would watch for mushrooms around any of those declining trees. There's a disease called armillaria root disease. It's another fungus, and it's called the shoestring fungus, or the mushrooms that it produces are called honey mushrooms. If you see any indication of these kind of honey-colored mushrooms around the base of the trees or in the root zone, that could be causing the decline as well. The other super common disease, but I wouldn't expect it to cause a ton of branch dieback, is black knot. It's what I affectionately call poop on a stick. So if you see any of those branches and it looks like an animal has defecated on the branch, there's this kind of blob on the branch, then you could be dealing with black knot. Occasionally that will cause branch dieback, but usually it's not as severe as what you're describing.
And Mike, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Brian Huddleston, our guest today, director of the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Taking a look at plant diseases on the show today, Larry Mueller here. Thanks so much for joining us today. Appreciate it very much. State Fair's on, by the way, and I wanted to mention that One of our regular guests, Melinda Myers, will be at the State Fair every single day, and she has three topics that she'll present every day. 10:45 in the morning, she'll talk about affordable food gardening. At 1, she talks about ornamental and edible container gardening success. And then at 4:30, she talks about how to grow your favorite vegetables well. And so she's there every single day, 10:45, 1, and 4:30. So you haven't met her in person. She's she's a nice person, and she's always willing to talk before and after her, especially after her presentation. So there you go. And just wanted to mention the survey that we have going on, that we're just trying to find out what you're learning from some of the shows that we have here on Garden Talk. So you can go to that link and also suggest some program ideas for us if you have some. Take you a minute or two to fill it out. Just go to WPR.org/Larry, WPR.org/Larry. Click on the link on the program note and spend a minute or two and to take care of that. And by the way, Melinda's with us on the 19th of August as well, so she'll be back again. She's one of our regular guests, as is Brian Huddleston. Brian, Dan emailed to say he has a case of lawn rust happening right now on his lawn and wonders, should he be concerned? Are there treatments that he should worry about or think about?
Yeah, I don't do a lot with turf. We actually have a separate diagnostic lab for that particular crop, but I do know that's an alternating rust as well, other than one of these pesky rust diseases. And that's actually, you really do want to get rid of the other host for that rust because it's an invasive plant. It's buckthorn. So look around on your property and try to get rid of the buckthorn, either seedlings or trees that you have. And that would help a little bit. The other thing I believe our turf pathologist has mentioned in terms of managing that disease is pretty regularly mowing your lawn. That'll remove the infected leaf tissue, and that's the source of additional spores that can reinfect the turf grass. There actually is another spore stage with this particular rust that is produced on grass and reinfects grass. That's the orange stuff that you're getting on your shoes when you walk through your lawn with the rust. And then the other thing is just improve the fertility a little bit. So maybe a little bit of nitrogen fertilizer. You get it growing more vigorously. And then again, with that, combined with the mowing, usually you can get that under control. It's not a lethal disease. So if you don't do anything at all, it's not going to kill your lawn. But those are some things you could try.
I don't know if you saw the photo, but Dana emailed to ask if she should be worried about chlorosis in her maple tree. And she sends some pictures of the leaves that do look chlorotic.
Yeah, the typical symptom of chlorosis is kind of light-colored leaves, either light green or yellowish, with very distinct dark green veins. And this can occur not only in maples, but other types of trees as well. And it's a nutrient problem. Usually in maples, it's a manganese deficiency, and a lot of other trees and shrubs like oaks or azaleas or rhododendrons. It's an iron deficiency. And it's usually not that we don't have enough of these nutrients in the soil. The big problem is that our underlying bedrock is limestone, which really tends to increase the soil pH. And at high soil pH, nutrients like manganese and iron are locked up in the soil, so the plants can't take them up. If you're totally concerned about this, oftentimes trees will survive for extended periods of time with chlorosis. If you start to get to the point where the tissue begins to die in between the veins, then I would start to get really concerned. But I've seen maple trees that are yellow like this for years and years and years and survive and grow and do fine. But if you really want to try to manage it, the place to start is a soil test. So find out what the soil pH is around your tree. I would also ask for tests for iron and manganese in the soil just to make sure it's not a deficiency of one or both of those nutrients in the soil. Again, that would be somewhat unusual for most places in Wisconsin. But then based on the soil pH value, assuming it's high soil pH, which it usually is, then you could try to amend the soil with something like elemental sulfur to reduce the soil pH. Now, if the soil pH is really high, so above about 7.5, you're probably not going to be able to lower it significantly. So if you have a really high soil pH, you're really stuck with having trees that are chlorotic, unfortunately. The other thing that you can do are do nutrient injections into the tree. Again, it would be nice to know which nutrients are actually missing. Again, in maples, it's typically manganese, but I would, in addition to doing that soil testing, I would do leaf testing as well and see what nutrients are missing in the leaves. And then if you wanted to do an injection treatment, I would base it on that testing. Downside to injecting, you're wounding your trees when you do that. So that provides entry points for other sorts of things like pathogens that could actually be more serious problems than what you're dealing with the chlorosis.
Hmm. Kathy in Rice Lake emailed, she has old grapevines that are showing leaves with spots, warts on the underside, and only on a few vines. What might this be and what should she do?
Yeah, the warts are probably an insect problem. I would give PJ a shout about that one. Again, if you email me, I'll just forward and take some photos. I'll forward that on to him for him to look at. I think it's called phylloxera gall. It causes these really large galls on the leaves. The brown spots could be a variety of things. If they're very, very circular, pretty uniformly circular, and have kind of a darker outer ring, be probably about a half an inch in diameter, it could be the leaf phase of black rot, which is a serious problem, not so much on the leaves, but on the fruits. It'll cause the roots, the fruits to shrivel up and mummify and get kind of bumpy with the little fruiting bodies of the fungus. That's a possibility, but there are other types of diseases that it could be as well. Again, that would require a formal diagnosis in order to figure out exactly what that is. But if these are in established settings, good cleanup usually is useful. If you really want to have good production, oftentimes you need to use fungicide treatments for control of certain of these diseases if you want a good crop.
And she called them old grapevines, and in that case, you know, they're
pruning and renovation would probably be a good idea as well. And again, what I would suggest, if you go to the Learning Store website, so that's the UW, just do a search on UW Learning Store, and that's the publications unit of the UW Madison and Extension, and do a search on growing grapes in Wisconsin. There's a beautiful series of publications called Growing Insert Your Favorite Fruit in Wisconsin. And they are wonderful. They tell you about variety selection, how to plant, how to prune, maintenance, fertilization, all of that sort of stuff.
And Nancy emailed, her redbud has a brown dead branch, only one currently, not broken. Is this an example of wilt that you described with the verticillium blocking the water uptake? Are redbuds susceptible in any cure or avoidance? The tree's 10 years old.
Yeah. If it's only a single branch and it hasn't progressed any, that's probably not verticillium wilt. It may be what's called a canker disease. These are oftentimes caused by fungi that locally infect an area on a branch and then girdle a branch, and that'll cause everything from that point out to die back. If you start to see this, if this is a recent occurrence in terms of the branch dying back, I would watch the tree. If it continues to have additional branches die back, then it could be verticillium. Redbud is super susceptible to that particular disease. I have verticillium wilt on my red buds in my home, in my yard here in Madison.
Louisa in Winona, Minnesota. We have time for that? Maybe not. Someone mentioned fertilizer. Can fertilizer cause too much, you know, in our last minute here, can it cause a problem when it comes to disease, too much fertilizer?
Yeah, if you over-fertilize, you tend to cause a real thick flush of growth, and that will create a nice moist environment. All of that growth traps air, and so you tend to get wetter conditions, and that can be more favorable for fungal diseases to get a foothold. Oftentimes the tissue grows very rapidly too and is a little bit more succulent, so it doesn't as readily fend off infections as well. So you do need to make sure you're fertilizing enough, but not overdoing it.
Brian Huddleston, our guest today. Brian is director of the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic in the Department of Plant Pathology at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Again, I'll mention if little survey that we're taking, go to WPR.org/Larry and click on the program note for that survey. And we're just asking what you felt like you learned this in our show. And also, if you have some ideas for other Garden Talk programs, we're always looking for that and appreciate those very much. I'm Larry Mueller with Brian Huddleston for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here and talking plant disease today with Brian Huddleston, director of the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic. Works out of the Department of Plant Pathology at UW-Madison. It's always great to have him with us. Garden disease questions, give a call, 800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Let's go to Louisa in Winona, Minnesota next. Louisa, thanks for waiting. What's on your mind?
Thank you very much for getting me on. Can you hear me okay? I have it on speaker.
Yes.
Okay. Another red bud question. I have a red bud that I bought at a commercial nursery. It's supposed to be Minnesota hardy. I've had it in the ground about 4 years. It was probably 4 or 5 feet tall when I bought it. This was, over those years, it's looked very healthy. Last year had a few blossoms. This year it was completely covered with blossoms. Beautiful, just what I wanted. And then as the leaves came out, they just all slowly wilted and died. There are no leaves on the trees. I haven't checked to see if the branches are brittle or anything yet, and I just don't know what happened.
Yeah.
Yeah, when the leaves turned brown, was it kind of all over the tree at the same time, or was it certain branches started first and then it kind of progressed across the tree?
Just as they came out, the leaves came out, they browned and withered and died.
Yeah, okay, so they were quite small when they browned up. That could potentially be from winter injury, even though it's technically hardy in your area. And again, those Minnesota bred varieties tend to do better farther north. But you can get certain conditions during the winter. Again, I talked about kind of variable temperatures, cooling and heating up. And if those trees kind of come out of dormancy early and then have a cold snap, that can cause a lot of injury. And certainly what you're describing where the leaves try to start to come out and then dry up would be consistent with some sort of winter injury on the tree. All you can do really is watch next year to see if there's any sprouting. My expectation would be it might sprout from the base of the tree, but that won't produce a particularly aesthetically pleasing tree. So you may have to look at a replacement for that particular tree.
There you go, Louisa. Thank you for calling. Sorry for that news.
Yeah. That tends to be my lot in life. I'm delivering bad news to everybody.
Catherine in Random Lake, your turn. Thank you for calling.
Thank you for taking my call. I have a dwarf self-pollinating sour cherry tree.
Okay.
And the tree was marvelous this year. I got 20 pounds of cherries off it. But about a week and a half ago, the leaves started turning yellow and spotted, and I looked it up, and it seems to be cherry spotted leaf disease.
But yeah, cherry leaf spot, yeah.
Yeah. Everything I've read says that I should put some fungicide, I believe, on it in the spring before the leaves come out. But this didn't hit until about a week and a half ago. And is it too late for me to do anything about it this year? Or I guess it can eventually kill my tree, and it's such a nice tree.
Yeah, that's primarily a leaf disease. It's not, the pathogen is not going to infect branches. I wouldn't expect it to directly kill a tree. If the tree defoliates over and over again, over successive years, you can stress the tree to the point where other more serious diseases might become an issue. My suggestion at this point would be to do really good fall cleanup. I would not apply fungicides at all right now. It's too late. Once you start to see symptoms of diseases, it's usually too late to apply fungicides. Fungicides are designed to prevent infection, not cure existing infections. So really, we're fairly late in the season. Concentrate on good fall cleanup of any of the leaf litter from that tree. And again, you can burn that material if you have that option, bury it, hot compost it. Any of those would work with this particular disease. And then what I would do would be to maybe do some thinning of the tree, if you think that's appropriate. That again will open up the canopy. If the leaves get wet, they tend to dry more quickly, and that'll help prevent this sort of disease next year. Then if it recurs, then I would just make sure to get a sample into a diagnostic clinic. You'd send it to mine, and you're in Wisconsin, is that correct?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yes, okay. You could send a sample down to mine just to verify. I hate making fungicide recommendations without knowing for sure what disease we're dealing with. I certainly think it's cherry leaf spot, but I'd want to verify that. And then I would make recommendations based on what I find for the following growing season. But sometimes you can get control just by doing these cultural things. So good cleanup, pruning and thinning of the canopy, and then you don't have to rely on fungicides for control.
Good luck,
Catherine. That would be my recommendation for now. Definitely don't use fungicides now. It's way too late in the season.
Thanks for calling. Faye in Milwaukee, it's your turn. Hi, Faye.
Hello. Another red bud. I just walked in from my garden and heard you talking about it. But my red bud I've had in for maybe 3 years, I have little bits of rust on some of the leaves. And I tried to pull those off, but I can't reach them all. And then I did notice that there's some mottling, like a on the green leaf, like a chartreuse little dots all over it inside, and they're not really dried out. So what do you think?
Yeah, on red bud, there are some physiological problems that occur that cause kind of spotting on the leaves. I have had leaves like you've described sent into my clinic and have not ever been able to find anything that looks like a true disease-causing organism on those leaves. And again, there are some physiological problems. So it's based on the genetics of the plant that will occur to, that will cause kind of these small peppery sort of spots on the leaves like you're describing. So it may be inherent in the genetics. What you might want to do is have a soil test done. And also, if you've got really healthy looking green leaves and then some of the spotted leaves, send those in to have a comparison in terms of nutrients for the two types of leaves to see if there are any nutrient problems. Sometimes you can see the sorts of symptoms that you're describing because there are fertility issues. So it might be good to rule that out. The UW Soil and Forage Lab can help with that. Again, you can search online and find information on how to submit samples. But usually with those sorts of leaf diseases, I've never seen a really, really serious leaf disease on redbud where it's caused major defoliation. It's usually very, very cosmetic. So just in case it is a true disease, all these things I talked about in terms of good fall cleanup, collect up those leaves, burn, bury, or hot compost, that would be applicable in this case, just in case it is a disease that you're dealing with. But I'm kind of suspicious that you aren't, that you aren't dealing with a disease.
Thanks, Faye, for calling. Appreciate it. Pete in Mequonago emailed that a few weeks ago he heard a loud crash, and to his surprise, it was a very old oak tree that had two very large trunk-like branches break from the main trunk. Can he salvage the tree or not? Does it, and if he can, does it still need to be painted to prevent oak wilt from spreading to nearby oaks through the roots system? Also, what would cause his tree to spontaneously break apart, perhaps wind damage, and days later inertia finally took over? That's probably a good guess on that part of it anyway.
Yeah. In terms of oak wilt and painting, it's too late to do that now. Anytime you want to paint to prevent oak wilt, it has to be done as soon as the wound is formed.
Yeah.
Sap beetles are the insects that can carry the oak wilt fungus around from tree to tree, and they can be attracted to wounded oak trees within about 10 minutes of the wound forming. So if it's been several days, they've had a chance to visit the tree. The lucky part is it's relatively late in the season, so the oak wilt fungus oftentimes isn't quite as active where the insect can pick it up, but there's still some likelihood there may have been transmission. In terms of evaluating the tree, I think this is really a job for a certified arborist. I would do a search online for Wisconsin Arborist Association. They have a searchable website where you can type in your county and find certified arborists who can come out and inspect your trees. It may be there's so much damage on the tree that it's not salvageable at this point. And the other thing they can check for, one of the things I worry about when I hear about collapse of branches or trees, is that there could be wood rot fungi that are associated with the tree. So if you happen to have seen any sort of shelf fungi on that tree, that would be an indication of a wood rotter that's gotten into the tree and is softening the wood and making it the tree less structurally sound. So an arborist could certainly help with evaluating for all of those. But again, if you're going to get an arborist, please get a certified arborist.
Let's go to Rick in New Glarus next. Hi, Rick. Thank you for calling.
Hey, Larry, thank you. And hi, Brian. Say, I know you're doing a survey, getting feedback on your show. Well, yeah. I have a little positive feedback for both of you. We heard about Brian on your show, and it goes back to another jug loan story. In the last few weeks, for the last several years, we've been having late tomato wilt on multiple tomato plants. And we have a lot of walnut trees, as many of us do out in the rural part of Dane County. And We moved a garden about 100 feet from all of the tree lines of the walnuts that we had, and we continued to have the wilt and would lost tomato plants, and they would wilt after they were very large and fairly mature and starting to make tomatoes. Well, long story short, we finally decided to take several of those plants into Brian in the last few weeks, and weren't sure if they had fungus or jug loan because we were a long way from the trees. Well, Brian did an excellent job and cultured those and ruled out any fungal diseases and narrowed it down for us to jug loan. So we have a raised bed for these tomato plants. It's only about 12 inches. He suggested elevating that, up to 2 or 3 feet to try and prevent the roots of the tomato plants getting down into the soil. But he narrowed it down for us and made it made sense of it for us. So did a wonderful job, and we found out about him through your show. So I really want to thank both of you.
Oh, Rick, thanks so much.
Thank you for the positive feedback. That means a lot to me. It really does. Yeah,
to me as well. Thank you, Rick. Very much appreciated.
I'm tearing up here because usually when I hear things, it's something that I've done that people don't like. So thank you very much for that. That really does mean a lot to me.
Yeah. Thanks, Rick. Ed in Kenosha, we'll go to you next. Hi, Ed. Thanks for calling.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. And thank you very much again, as usual, for taking these kind of calls. My issue is regarding arborvitae and the browning of emerald green arborvitae. I have a row of them, and they have been showing brown, kind of brown patches. How does one determine on a instant basis, right now and on a long-term basis, whether it's just drought damage or whether it's blight?
Yeah, that again would involve submitting a sample. What we would do is try to look for any sort of disease problem in one or more of those branches that you would send in that have the brown needles. And I would suggest if you want to submit a sample, not only the needles, but the branch cut back towards the trunk, because it could be that there's an infection along that branch that's girdled the branch and caused the needles to brown because they're just not getting enough water anymore. And we do it kind of by a process of elimination. We look for diseases. If we can't find anything, then we'll kind of report back that we can't find anything. And then we will talk about you know, definitely watering, although that's not necessarily something you have to wait to do. If you're in a droughty period and you don't feel like your shrubs are getting enough water, about an inch of water per week, then definitely I would get out there. If they're special plants to you, make sure you're giving them supplemental water. With evergreens, you need to start that early in the growing season, probably as soon as they begin to bud out, or even earlier when the ground starts to thaw, and make sure they're getting about an inch per week, and then continue monitoring into the fall up until either the ground freezes or you get a significant rainfall or a snowfall. You need to make sure that they're getting a lot of water to store internally to make it through the wintertime, because they can dehydrate over the winter.
So that's kind
of the process I go through when I'm diagnosing something like what you're describing.
Ed, thank you so much. Pauline emailed. She has 3 9-bark shrubs that are 4 years old. She's noticed that lately a few branches have the white dusty look to them. This white powder appears toward the top of the plant. One affected branch looks very wilted, but the rest of that branch lower to the base of the plant looks fine. She wonders if it's an insect issue, but it may be something else.
Yeah, I think it's that powdery mildew most likely that we talked about based on the description. That, again, would be something if you really wanted to know, send me in some of those branches, mm-hmm. and I'll take a look. That's an easy diagnosis for me. But, again, on 9-bark, particularly if it's a red foliage variety, my thought goes immediately to powdery mildew.
Steve called to ask your opinion about neem oil to prevent, or rather control, disease and insects.
There are some uses for neem oil. I think personally, my experience with neem oil has been that it works probably better as an insecticide than as a fungicide. But certainly there are people who use this routinely for trying to control diseases. And it's a more organic option if you want to go that route. I definitely, if you want to see how well it works, you can set up your own little experiments in your garden. So if you've got a couple plants or a few plants of the same type that you want to test, treat some of them with the neem oil. Don't treat others and see if you see any difference in terms of their performance, in terms of the diseases that develop. Keep in mind that sometimes with oils, you can run into toxicity issues on occasion, particularly if they're applied when it's really, really hot. There can be some interactions that aren't too great for the plant, and you'll see kind of browning of the leaves, and it's a result of the oil application. So definitely something to look into, but I would kind of play around and be your own little, you know, scientist at home.
Sure.
and compare plants that are treated and not.
Andy in Fort Atkinson, what's on your mind?
Well, we have a number of blue spruces on our property and in the neighborhood. I've noticed that they seem to be dying from the bottom up. And I'm wondering, you know, what the cause of that might be. The other question is on the walnut. We had a walnut tree next to our garden, a small one that I didn't realize was until we started bearing fruit. So I had it taken down. Could that be still affecting our garden?
Yep.
Yeah, I've seen some studies that indicate even if you cut down a walnut tree, that the roots can continue to exude the toxins for anywhere from on the order of 15 to 20 years. So it's a very long-term sort of potential problem if you've got a walnut tree. And I did exactly like you did. I had a volunteer walnut that came up next to my garden and didn't do anything about it, and then wondered why my father Gila next to it died. And when I dug it up, there was a walnut root right through the root mass of the father Gila. In terms of your other question,
blue spruce dying.
Yeah. That's probably due to the number one moneymaker for me and my clinic. It's a disease called Rhizosphera needle cast. It's incredibly common on spruce trees, particularly blue spruce, but now more so as well on types of white spruce, which includes Black Hill spruce. And it's a fungal disease. The fungus apparently infects the newly emerging needles each spring and kind of sits there and doesn't do a lot of damage until those needles are farther back in the canopy and they've aged a bit. It kind of accelerates normal needle loss in the interior of the tree, and it can cause a lot of thinning. It's one of the reasons I don't recommend blue spruce anymore, and I'm not recommending white spruce anymore either. Those are just problematic species in our landscape. About the only thing you can do for management that's reasonable is as the bottom branch is thin, just prune those up. And that'll open up airflow and will tend to slow down the disease. But that disease can eventually progress through the entire tree as you get a really, really big tree. Technically, there are fungicide treatments, but I don't think those are worthwhile doing, quite frankly. You can't do them yourselves. You have to have them done professionally. And even so, getting good, even coverage and getting enough applications on in a given growing season, and you'd have to do this year after year, that's just not feasible, oftentimes, just from an economic standpoint.
Yeah.
Cost too much.
Andy, thanks. Dale wonders in an email about all these problems with red buds. Do you think we should not plant them? Are some varieties better than others?
No, I love red bud, and I would not recommend that tree. I have very fond childhood memories of visiting my dad's parents in central Illinois, and they had a beautiful red bud that arched over their driveway. And I think it is a usable plant in many different situations. You can run into disease problems on basically any type of plant. So you run the risk, if you're just growing plants, that you're going to have a disease, and potentially it could be a lethal disease. But I think red buds have enough ornamental potential that I would suggest that you continue to grow them if you have an interest in that tree. Just keep in mind that if you do end up getting something like verticillium wilt, that will change what you can plant in that area in your yard. But we do have, like I said, a list of trees that we recommend. It's on our fact sheet on verticillium wilt. So no, don't stop growing red buds. I think they're lovely trees.
Michael wonders, he had tomatoes and also potatoes in bags, growing them in bags, and they both got diseases. He's wondering if the soil, if he could use that soil again. The bags are just kind of sitting there now.
I would be inclined not to. Sometimes probably wouldn't have a ton of potential carryover of pathogens, but I think you'd be safer starting with fresh soil.
Yeah.
Because if you get any little bits of those disease plants that have filtered down into the soil, those could harbor whatever disease-causing organisms that you were dealing with, and those could be carried over from year to year.
Brian, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me again. I always love doing the show, and thanks for all the folks who have chimed in today and listened and asked questions. It's been really great.
It has been great. Brian Huddleston, director of the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic in the Department of Plant Pathology at UW-Madison, our guest. Don't forget about that survey. Go to WPR.org/Larry. You can click the link on our program notes there and just fill that survey, just asking what you learned and then ideas for future shows on Garden Talk. We certainly look forward to those as well. Monday at this time, tech expert Beth DeAngelo will be back to talk about technology that can protect your home. That's Monday starting at 11. But in the meantime, lots of good shows right through the afternoon here, and I hope you stay with us. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, and have yourselves a great weekend.